Scott McNulty's here.
I am.
Yay.
It's an official book club now.
It's a horrible mistake.
There was somebody. Somebody on the internet said it's not a book club if Scott's not on it.
Well, that's not true.
That person was a monster. Shame.
There have been many book clubs without me.
I just admire how much you read. You are one prolific bookworm.
Yes.
I have very few friends. And my wife doesn't like to talk to me.
She locks herself in the kitchen and builds a fortress of jam jars. Is that what you're saying?
That's what she does.
Well, yeah. Really, who doesn't?
I was thinking that the book club always, whenever I'm on it, we're always talking about a book that I have recommended. Not always, but a large percentage of the time. And then I realized that it's self-selecting because when someone else selects a book, I don't go to the book club.
The hell with you guys.
Interesting. It shows you what you think of us, Scott.
Which is why I was happy to read the William Gibson book.
You were up for it.
I would not have read it otherwise. Yeah,
no.
Really? Really?
And I wouldn't have read Slow Apocalypse.
I checked that one out from the library, but I didn't read it.
Well, I will say we should save
supplemental. We should save it. Yes.
Yeah.
That apocalypse not that slow.
No. Pretty speedy.
Maybe it's ironic. All right. Well, we should do this then because we have two books to talk about.
Let's do this thing.
All right.
Two and a half if the slow apocalypse contingent makes itself known.
Sure. Well, that's supplemental material. I'm happy to talk about it.
We're going to talk about it briefly.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh my God.
And the answer to what I'm reading is nothing. I haven't read anything. So, you know, there you go.
Ever.
I never learned to read.
This is the most elaborate long con ever
and
constructed.
I mind. That is one of my favorite things in the classic 1992 movie Wayne's World is the Oscar clip. As it flashes on the screen, Oscar clip, and he flicks water onto his face like it's tears, and he says, I mind big time, and you know the most important thing of all? I never learned to read. And then he cut away, and it's like, I was very sad that year at the Oscars, they didn't play the fake Oscar clip. It was a perfect joke.
But it's the Oscars. Come
I
on.
Know. They ruin everything. That's now performing this Phil Collins song, Dancer Anne Rhine King, everybody. What? Why would you?
Well, when Bob Oscar. Heard the song from the afterlife.
Oh.
That might have been the Rob Lowe Snow White duet year of the Oscars.
Man. Good times.
Look, he addressed that first autobiography.
One year, Peter Gabriel got nominated for Best Song, and I was like, oh, Peter Gabriel performance at the Oscars, that'll be great. And they announced, not performing any of the songs this year. There'll be a medley with dancing, and then, but that's it. I'm like, really? Really?
There was a year where he got nominated for the song he did for Babe, and...
Randy Newman performed a mournful,
and it was
dirge-like version.
And it was right as he was moving into like late middle age and shaving his head bald and growing the goat beard.
Yeah,
and
oh man, not a good look.
And the last time I had seen him was on the Secret World Tour, and I'm like, what happened?
What happened to Peter Gabriel? Who are you, Burl Ives, and what have you done with Peter Gabriel? I was listening to Mike Hurley and Casey Liss's podcast today, and they were talking about music, and at some point Casey said, you know, I like some old people music, like Peter Gabriel, and I went, oh, it burns! Oh, yeah. Casey, how could you? Although it is true, actually, these days Peter Gabriel is pretty much performing old people music, because it's like, I've all my songs now performed by a symphony orchestra. Okay.
It's when you get multiple tribute albums, that's how you can tell you've crossed over.
Yeah. He's not even trying anymore.
He doesn't have to.
Anyway, he is an old man, isn't he?
He looks the part too. Yeah. But there's that moment where your mental image of him is from 1990, and then you see him and you're like, oh wow, he's a bald goat bearded old guy now.
What did you do to time to make time do this to you?
Oh, poor Peter Gabriel.
I know. Old people music, that really hurt. I shouted at my at my podcast speakers in my car, I shouted
like
at
an old man.
I cursed it.
But Jason, we saw him in like 2002, and there were all these graying people with ponytails walking across the floor. And I'm like, what are they doing?
It made us feel young, though, Lisa.
A little bit, and then I was like, but I'm watching a rock concert where I'm like one of the youngest people here, and that makes me feel old in itself.
Well timed by you, because that was we left Jamie when she was a baby with Phil, because Phil had no interest in your Peter Gabriel pops and whistles crazy music like that. So he watched the baby, and we went, it might have been like 2003, but she was old enough that she was talking, so it was a little bit older, because I remember when we left the house and to head home, Jamie had requests. She wanted to go back and play, and she said, "Play a Phil, play a Lisa, play a Zito."
Yeah.
She wanted to play with you guys and your cat, but we said, "No, honey, we got to go home now." Yeah. But Phil had no interest in
Peter Gabriel,
crazy Peter Gabriel music.
The only interest in Peter Gabriel is if he's like, is he doing the Genesis stuff where he's dressed like a daisy? Because then I'll watch.
No, alas. All right, that was our music podcast, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it.
That would be funny if you did it as such, because I think genuine music people would be insane with rage over that.
Well, I hope they enjoy the bonus track this week. I was listening to somebody talk about Star Wars and try to figure out the chronology of that today. And it's actually very similar, where it's like in the original Star Wars movies, they're like, oh, yeah, Empire, Jedi, that was a long time. You know, the Jedi was a long time ago. The Republic was a long time ago. And then the prequels come and it's like, oh, no, that was 15 years ago. It's like, well, nobody believes. It was the talk show when John Siracusa and John Gruber were talking about it. Nobody believes it. Han Solo doesn't think the Jedi existed, but they were like 15 years ago. How
that
could he not
weird.
Believe it? And it's a little bit. This is a little bit like that, which is
blown my mind. Oh God, I had never done the math.
Yeah, Han mouthing off about ancient religions is a little questionable.
Whoa. Yeah, because it's a reminder of a more graceful age, and I'm like, oh my God, he must, like, my thought when I was a small child was like Obi-Wan had to be like 200 years old, and man, no,
he's talking about the 90s.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think, have any of you guys read the This World We Live In, or the follow-ups? I'm trying to remember the name of the author. Sarah Beth Lacey.
No.
Oh, this is the Asteroid Hits the Moon.
Asteroid Hits the Moon, yeah. I'm sorry, Susan Beth Pfeiffer, not Sarah Beth Lacey. Susan Beth Pfeiffer. But the second book in that series actually talks about how urban children handled the comet crashing into the moon. And I felt like the survival sequences and the perks and the hazards of riding out an extinction event in the city, I felt like that was a lot more realistically handled than I'm going to hole up in here with my noble disabled brother who's going to kill himself.
Yeah.
Like I said, I get that was supposed to be, people choose to take themselves out of this because they recognize that there's no room in the afterscape, or, oh, Jeevan has to become less shallow and this is the first step on a journey and whatever. And it also has, and in everything, every piece of apocalypse porn, there is always the person who gets the advance warning somehow gets ahead of the game. And Jeevan was the guy who got the advance warning from his friend in the ER.
Also, the peripherals themselves, I found it very weird to read a William Gibson book where there's a William Gibson take on having these virtual bodies that it was like, I'm not sure he's very good at the more sensual kinds of things, right? Like there's a scene where the character goes into the bathroom and she's like feeling her boobs and stuff of her peripheral, and I'm like, this is uncomfortable for me. Not that I've read scenes like that in other books, but it's like, I'm not sure William Gibson is comfortable doing this. I think he felt like I have to talk about it, right? But I don't really want to. So here's a scene in a bathroom. And then,
can I tell you like my most horrifying grad school story that actually has to do with William Gibson and nipples?
Sure.
Yes.
I think.
So I took a class on the history of communications technology in grad school, and one of the books that they actually had us read and engage with the text was Neuromancer. And if you remember, the whole point to Neuromancer is that cyberspace cowboys can use decks to jack into cyberspace, right? That sounds so antiquated now.
I know.
And
they're jacking in.
And at one point in the book, Case is jacking in so he can see things through hired mercenary Molly's perspective and pick up all of her senses. So he's literally like riding along inside her brain, and he can feel what she feels, and he realizes this. And so in the book, Molly reaches in through her leather cat suit and begins touching her breasts so he can be all taken aback by the sensations. And we literally spent 40 minutes reading and rereading that passage and taking it apart as to, you know, who is feeling what and what this meant about male versus female power play dynamics and the disintermediation of technology and so on and so forth. And by the end of it, I was like, I never want to see another human body again. Mm. Not mine, not anybody else's. I don't want to see the word nipple anywhere near William Gibson. I can't even handle it.
I don't think it's
so
as strong.
So this is like a whole lot better. But that said, Gibson is kind of your maiden aunt when it comes to matters of the flesh.
Yeah, I don't think it's his strong point, and he feels like uncomfortable. I can feel the author's discomfort in doing it. It's like, well, you know, there is sex. I guess I got to talk about that. And it's very much like that. Like,
he's got that short story, and I forget the name of it. Oh, Burning Chrome. He's got, there's that short story, Burning Chrome, where the idea is that there's a certain type of prostitution that women can practice where they have some sort of neural implant put in and their higher consciousness literally cuts off from their brain. And he says, so basically their bodies in a quote-unquote, a bundle of conditioned reflexes take over. And just his squeamishness about connecting sex to volition.
Yeah, that's basically how he describes the peripherals when they're not plugged into somebody is very much like they're just kind of dully reactive, which is also creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go back to talking about sheep, whatever.
I want to tell people what I was reading. It's American Cornball, as sort of encyclopedia about things that aren't funny anymore and why outhouses and anvils were so popular in old comic strips.
Nice.
Really?
Yeah, it's great.
So why were outhouses so popular in old comic strips?
Does it have about Long Johns with the flap on the bottom?
I don't think they have their own category. I think those are covered under underwear or hillbilly.
Okay, because that's the one that always baffled me.
Yes.
Outhouses are funny because they are they're about poop and also hillbillies. Hillbillies are hilarious, as you may remember from Lil Abner.
Of course.
And yes. Green Acres and Beverly Hillbillies and Petticoat Junction.
Yes. Hillbillies. My understanding is the hillbilly shows were meant to appeal to rural viewers, though.
Mm-hmm.
So they were not making fun of the hillbillies.
Yeah, CBS used to have the corner on that. They were once called Country Broadcasting Network. They had so many hours of it.
And there was the year where they realized that demographically they should stop catering to the rural viewers and cater to urban viewers, and they canceled all of those shows.
Yeah.
Andy Griffith. I feel like we must have read the same piece recently, because there was a bit of background on that.
I don't know. I was reading this a couple years ago. Yeah.
But there was a thing I read a couple of weeks ago about the TV show He and She. That was Richard Benjamin and Paula Prentice and Jack Cassidy. And it's really kind of what led to the Mary Tyler Moore Show and Bob Newhart and all that. But it was in 1967. It was on for 1 year. It was this really intelligent, witty, bright comedy that they put in between like Green Acres and Petticoat Junction because they didn't have anywhere to put it on their schedule. And it died because it didn't, you know. But the people who made that went on to make Mary Tyler Moore. And it was sort of like that was the turning point where they started to go, you know, these people, the people who watch this have more money. They'll have better ads. Yeah, let's do that.
It was called the Rural Purge, not to be confused with the Rural Juror. And
Rural Purger.
And it was between 69 and 72. Most popular rural-themed shows were canceled, and most of that was at the end of the 1970 to 71 season. So this is when Andy Griffith, Beverly Hillbillies, Green Acres, Mr. Ed, Petticoat Junction, and Hee Haw were all canceled.
Yep.
Oh, I was reading about Honey Boo Boo. That's where I read all that stuff. Yeah. Okay.
Talk to Mr. Ed.
And, of course, there was a time when flinging bricks at people was hilarious. It was done by everybody.
So why anvils?
Crazy
cat. Why anvils?
Anvils were pretty much just in Looney Tunes, and I think it's because they look heavy. There's very few things can be drawn so you can clearly see that it's heavy. Pianos and safes also are constantly calling on people.
Safes.
But those are apparently justified because sometimes you build a skyscraper and you want a safe on the top floor and you don't have elevators yet.
So you lift it up on the outside, and if the scaffolding doesn't work right because it's really heavy, whoa!
That's apparently justified.
Down comes the
safe. Here's something that's weird. Reading this book made me buy a collection of the first couple of years of Lil Abner because I wanted to know. You know, everybody says it's a great comic strip. I've never read it. In the first week of Lil Abner's run, he leaves Dogpatch to go to New York City for a run. And that's crazy to me. Wouldn't you think they'd establish Dogpatch for a while first?
Yeah.
But no.
Well.
Al Cap, you couldn't keep him down on the farm.
He was nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. It's been so long since I read Chuck Jones' autobiography, Chuck Amuck. But I can't remember if he explained why they loved anvils. I know he talks about them.
Anvils and why we love them. On
this
the
is
next
the Anvil podcast.
Incomparable anvil.
Well, sometimes you need an anvil at the top of a skyscraper, and there are no elevators, so.
That's right.
Something like that. Well, Lisa, we'll meet again and to talk about the Marvel comics reboot thing, I think. That's going to be next one on the agenda for you.
I have to read up on that then, because
and we have a bad movie coming up for some of us too.
Yeah, and Phil and I keep our stupid hands-on parenting things would be. We keep meaning to do Phil and Lisa ruin the movies for the Oscar nominations, and unfortunately, we also insist on paying attention to our child. And
yeah,
so
well,
that's
it. It does. It's that podcast life balance that happens. Hey, Monty, are you going to do a crazy Oscar stunt this year or not?
I am not.
Okay,
I've let it go too long, and now it's too late.
Yeah, it's too late because you got to really marathon.
The foreign movies just don't seem possible this year.
Yeah. You could do a light version. You could like go see the best picture movies or something.
That's hardly the same. That's not a crazy stunt.
No, that's just seeing movies.
That's just something people should be expected to do. Although there's no legitimate way for me to see Whiplash.
Huh. Interesting.
It's not in theaters anymore, and it's not going to be streaming or DVD until the weekend after the Oscars.
Interesting.
Oh, geez.
So all this publicity they're getting for the next month.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Badly timed.
Yeah, I might see it through methods, but...
So we're going to do... So Bad Movie Club is going to be... Did we decide? I think we did decide.
It sounded like everybody was okay
the
with
core. The core. Oh, man.
I'm on board with it.
Yeah, and then we'll go back in time. We'll just... If we decide this is a good idea, we'll go back in time and do other decades. And the chat room can... All four people in the chat room can hear that we're going to watch an old movie. A bad movie. And also Hitchcock. So we got a lot of good stuff coming up. We got Groundhog Day next week. We got Bad Movie Club. We got the Marvel Comics reboot. And we're going to talk about less appreciated Hitchcock movies on the old movie club. So stay tuned. Podcasting.
Not actually the terrible Hitchcock movies.
No, it's
no
the
good.
It's the underappreciated underrated. Is what the way Phil described it.
Yeah.
I don't know nothing about most Hitchcock. I've seen like four of them. So no, that's why I like Old Movie Club, is I've seen no old movies. I'm terrible at old movies.
Yeah. Rope. I'm looking forward to talking Rope because I like Rope.
Huh? Yeah, I like Rope a lot. It's only like 70 minutes.
Yeah. See, Phil's point is that they're good. They're just underappreciated. Yeah,
It's because it's all 10-minute scenes.
Right, because they would run out of film.
Yeah. And so it's like 8 10-minute scenes or something like that.
These days, with digital photography, they can make an entire movie in one shot. It's that Russian movie. Oh. It's the whatever arc. The Russian arc.
Barely a movie. Really pretty, though. It will put you to sleep.
It's like Birdman is supposed to look like one single continuous shot.
I've been in the Winter Palace. I've been in there. I could be like, hey, I've been in there. But that's it. And the Hermitage.
I was very impressed by the Russian arc. It's not a movie.
Not a movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I keep seeing all these things of, you know, it's the best movie about theater ever. Yeah. And I want to say to all these people, no, it's the best movie about pretentious theater people ever.
What's the
and
movie?
Clearly you love it. So
what? It's Birdman. Oh, Birdman is currently
Birdman.
The yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought yeah. With Whale
I saw
and
I
was
it.
The best movie about.
I mean, I liked it.
People.
I don't think it's you know.
Yeah.
I don't think it's the best theater movie ever.
No, I think Michael Keaton's performance is why you see that movie. Oh, and Edward Norton's. Edward Norton is phenomenal. Yeah.
So we've got. I take it back. We have 8 people currently listening. So hi, 8 people in the chat room. There's at least Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if AF Waller is still in there, but AF Waller was single-handedly holding up the chat room earlier.
Good for him.
So David, have you seen With Nail and I?
Oh, yes.
Okay, good.
Been a while.
I haven't seen Birdman, but my wife and I have decided if we get a cat, we're going to name it Michael Kitten.
Oh. Is it trying to get over its previous life as Birdman?
It might. Who knows?
He's followed around by a flying cat just over his shoulder.
Interesting. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. This was a long one, and I'm sorry. I apologize to Scott because we beat up on a book you liked, and to Monty because we didn't let you get to all of your list items. And I hope we can all still be friends. I like reading books, even if I don't like the books. I like reading the books.
I didn't write the book, so you can say whatever you want about it.
That's right. That's true.
America's
Good point.
Got Talent is not a CBS show.
I thought they got that right. Mistake. I don't think. Yeah, I thought I didn't see that in my. Did you read a print copy?
No, I read the.
You read
Kindle.
The Kindle? Oh, I see
the iBooks copy.
Oh, I don't know.
Hang on, I've got my Kindle right here.
I'll find it.
It's got a search function.
This is the most important thing about whether this is a realistic apocalypse. Is where is America's Got Talent on the?
Got.
I think I'm with you. I think I'm with you, Scott.
She's Canadian, so maybe in Canada.
Oh,
I don't know if they have CBS in Canada, but
yeah,
it says here NBC.
Yeah, see, that's what I see too.
Oh, really? Let me see.
David.
Well, the shoe is
CBS switched without comment to reruns of America's Got Talent.
Wow. They must have corrected it and iBooks version doesn't have the correct version.
Yeah. Maybe. Chapter 43.
That's what they want you to think.
What I've got here is
you're actually in a stub.
So what do you
on
have
a Chinese server?
What do you have in the sentence before that? Who's saying good night and good luck?
Good night, NBC said an hour later, and good luck.
I've got CBS saying good night and good luck, which I believe
is right because it's Edgar Murrow. So yeah, interesting. Well, never mind then.
All right.
In that case, it was a great book.
It was a great book.
Yeah.
All I'm is totally forgiven.